Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker is In. Today, I'm delighted to have Elizabeth Lane, the CMO of Appear Here, join me to talk about Appear Here and its really interesting platform that brings together landlords with empty retail space with brands who would like to appear there or here, depending upon how you're using the sentence. Hey, Elizabeth, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Karen. Great to meet you.
So just to put a little context around Appear Here, it really is a platform that is bringing together empty space with retailers, brands, other creative types that want a physical storefront location, and it's an opportunity for them to do that on a short-term basis. But before we get into the mechanics, I want to get a little bit of context about how Appear Here got started. And I thought the story of your founder and CEO was interesting. It was 2012. It was the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. And he had the idea to set up a pop-up shop to sell a bunch of doodads that were commemorating that occasion. And so my question is that was this a proof of concept for a business idea, or did the business idea happen after he realized it was successful?
Yeah, so the pop-up shop, which actually was called Rock and Rule, was done while our founder, Ross Bailey, was at advertising school. So for him, it was, you know, he was one of those creatives looking to capitalize on a national event in London and create a moment there. You know, he developed a T-shirt brand and wanted to share it with the city. He found that the most difficult part of setting it up was actually negotiating with the landlord to find an amazing shop in Soho. And while he was doing that, he was involved with his friends from school, as well as other entrepreneurs and creatives and fashion designers who had contributed to the pop-up. They were similarly all interested in trying to find space. And actually at the time, he received a phone call from Under Armour, who had been searching for a shop for the Olympics. So he's like, why is this young kid, you know, a 20-something-year-old kid, getting a phone call from a marketing lead at Under Armour? And so he realized there was something to that concept of trying to find space for specific moments. You know, he developed the concept from there. But first, he looked at hiring not a tech team or a bunch of real estate guys. Instead, he hired a designer, a photographer, a copywriter, because he knew that in order to attract sort of the new age brands, he was going to need to build a brand himself in an industry that historically had been pretty outdated and it seemed unapproachable for brands, marketers, and entrepreneurs.
So when he had this idea, was it hard to get landlords to agree to short-term rental? Because that's really what this is all about. Or did they say, yeah, that sounds great. Getting a little bit of money for a short period of time is better than zero money?
No, in the beginning it was actually really hard. And it wasn't until he was able to convince a few of the initial big landlords in the UK that things started to take off. Also, along the years, we've had some strategic investment from a real estate private equity firm called Meyer Bergman, as well as Simon Venture Group, which is the venture arm of Simon Property Group here in the States, which helps give us credibility among the landlord community. But I'd say in many ways, that's the most difficult part of the platform. We have so much demand on the brand side, so much unfulfilled demand monthly, and it's really about trying to acquire the spaces that match that demand and convince landlords to join our platform and to really do things the Appear Here way. I think a lot of landlords today now, in theory, understand the concept, but, you know, aren't necessarily as willing to jump on doing things in a new way.
Yeah, just here in Boston on Newbury Street, I have friends in the real estate business, and I'm always amazed that there are empty storefronts in the first block of Newbury Street, which is the, you know, the fancy schmancy part of that stretch of street, and my what I've been told is that they'd rather have it empty than to sacrifice rent cost per square foot that would drive down, you know, the overall economic proposition of that space. I always thought that that was just so curious, but it sounds like it's not just a Boston Newbury Street thing.
No, it's not. And I think it's not only about what's the price listed online, but it's also about landlords realizing, you know, doing this the traditional way isn't necessarily worth the hassle for a couple of months. So in a traditional lease, you know, going through a broker model and working with lawyers, it might take 3 to 6 months to sign a lease, which doesn't really make sense if the lease is just for a couple of months or even a couple of days itself. By bringing the whole process online, we're able to streamline things, and our average booking takes 3 to 6 days, which makes a lot more sense if you're booking for the short term. We're also able to cut down costs on the legal end by using a standard license agreement that landlords agree to up front and accepting payments online either by credit card or through transfer, bank transfer.
I was going to ask you how you eliminate that friction from the landlord, because you're right, they're looking for long-term commitments, and there is the hassle factor that goes into it, but you answered that question. What's the typical term of the short-term rental? What is short-term?
Yeah, so we've booked everything from a day all the way up until actually 3 years, but our sweet spot tends to be a couple of months. That being said, we're starting to notice in the U.S. We're getting slightly longer leases than in the U.K. and France, and have already had quite a bit of interest in extension, which I think is a nice selling point, actually, to landlords. You know, here's a way for them to look at acquiring a potential long-term tenant by having the tenant have the ability to sort of test the space first before signing a long-term lease. I think a lot of the newer brands are hesitant on putting an investment in a long-term lease. You know, it's a really high fixed cost for the business. And, you know, a venture-backed business is scared of having that on their balance sheet, for example. But by testing with a short-term lease, testing with a pop-up, they're able to prove that this works for them and really build a business case for a longer-term lease.
Do you find that having one of the advantages of a pier here is that the space isn't empty? So it's like an empty restaurant. Who wants to go into an empty restaurant? Everybody
yeah.
wants to go into a restaurant that you have to wait. Having a tenant, does that make the space more desirable, and do they often get better leads that convert to a long-term lease, you know, whether it's for the existing tenant or someone new?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like staging an apartment as well. I mean, it's easier to sell something where someone can envision what it's actually going to look like. I think it's important for our tenants to leave a space in the same condition that they saw it in or that they accepted it in. But we're able to photograph and market the space. It helps us get additional short-term tenants, and it's helped businesses also secure long-term tenants as well.
How have you decided to ignite the platform? I know you're in fashion capitals, New York recently, London, Paris. But within those cities, do you have particular criteria for where you want to onboard these landlords? Do you take everyone who's interested? What's the process look like from that standpoint?
Well, so our focus is on retail spaces in prime retail districts or high streets, as we call them in the UK. And we're looking for spaces that are white box units that are 500 to 2,000 square feet. That being said, on occasion, we'll away from that a little bit and take really interesting or unique spaces as well. We will also use some of the data from our platform, so whether it be where brands are requesting. So if we're seeing a lot of requests for the Upper East Side, for example, in New York, and we don't have a lot of space there, we'll sort of refocus some of our efforts in landlord outreach to that location.
And how do you decide where to go next? I mean, New York is an obvious an obvious choice, but there's an awful lot of empty retail space in so many different cities across the United States. What's the screening process, and how do you pick the next, how will you pick the next city?
Mm-hmm. Well, our focus overall has been to be in the top retail cities in the world, starting with London, Paris, New York. Those three have always been on sort of the roadmap for the business. Then from there, it's really about seeing where the demand is. So I can tell you right now, we're getting a lot of inquiries for LA, San Francisco, Miami, Chicago. You know, we'll be looking into all of those in the future. But really, it's important for us as a marketplace not to scale super quickly and instead really hone in on specific cities and build deep relationships there with the landlord and real estate community. So we're focused on building out New York and really winning over top key landlords and really saturating the city in terms of number of spaces before moving on.
I will ignore the fact that you didn't include Boston on your list of fashion capitals, but okay. I get it.
We'll let you know if we get demand there.
All right. Definitely do that. How do you vet? Let's switch to the demand side for a second. How do you vet potential tenants? What kind of screening process, if any, do you put them through?
Well, so we actually don't pick the tenants on behalf of the landlord. We do send across any interest to a landlord for their spaces. That being said, we aren't proactively, we don't have a proactive sales team going to get tenants. Instead, mm-hmm. we function very much like an online business. Mm-hmm. We spend money on Google AdWords. We spend money on Facebook. You know, we do online advertising. And we're getting brands coming in that way. And we find sort of newer brands are, you know, they're searching for Google when they're looking for their next investment in terms of real estate. They're not necessarily calling up their broker. So that being said, that's how demand is attracted to the platform. And then for us, we're more of the conduit as opposed to someone who's vetting those brands before passing them to the landlord.
Got it. So you're just acting as the intermediary that says, here brand, here's a list of places in New York where there's vacancy. I tried to sign up, but of course you're not in Boston. I've said that now twice. I'll probably say it a third time before we end up here. But they would get a list of different places, different rents, and then it's up to the landlord to seal the deal.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we do have a concierge team, and we really pride ourselves in our customer service, but it's not a sales team. You know, they're there to help along the way, potentially give you advice on different areas to look if you're a brand. We have a host of ancillary tools and services that we've worked with in the past that we often will recommend, but we're not vetting that brand before passing it over to the landlord.
Have you ever thought about a marketplace model where you would fulfill some of those functions and perhaps build out other services and capabilities that brands might be able to leverage as part of being on your platform?
Yeah, so actually we've explored two things. So one is we have a special project team, and that actually is more of helping specific landlords that we see a need for a curation element. So that's the one case in which we do a bit of vetting on our end. So an example there is we work with Topshop globally, and we manage their concessions. So we help Topshop. We understand what the buyers are looking for. We understand their team. And we help them vet brands that are interested in taking concession space within their stores, both in New York as well as in the UK. In terms of other ancillary services for the brands, you know, we've thought about helping out with store design, store fit out. We get a lot of questions on that. We get a lot of questions based on what we've seen in the past for other brands. And I think there's potentially room for that in the future, but right now as a business, we're really staying focused on our core business, on really building out our marketplace.
Yeah, interesting that you bring up the concession space inside of an existing retailer. I mean, that is one of the criticisms of, you know, quote-unquote traditional retail. Inventory is kind of stale, not a lot of cool brands that that are popping up in those spaces that have new fresh merchandise. So this appears to be a trend that retailers are exploring now, it seems, to as I said, freshen up their look and the experience for the shopper.
Yeah, we're seeing both bigger retailers like a Topshop as well as small boutique retailers. Like we even have a retailer called Five Story in New York, which is a high-end concept store on the Upper East Side.
Interesting. So when brands are looking for retail space, you know, it's the battle cry is, you know, physical retail is dead. Who goes to brick and mortar stores anymore? Why do we need these? Why are they looking for retail space, even if it's temporary? Is it as part of a launch to get people accustomed to their brand and then they'll disappear and be online, or do they intend to have a physical presence longer term?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think ultimately we like to think of brands looking at retail space right now, trying to figure out how retail space can be more of a variable cost for them as opposed to a fixed cost. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at using retail to test the market. So whether it's testing the market in terms of a product launch or if they want a long-term store. We also see it as a way for retailers to connect to customers. So you'll have brands like a Kanye West, for example, looking to build out a retail store to connect with customers outside of tour dates. We also see it as a way for brands to build a moment or tie to a moment, just like our founder created a pop-up for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee in the UK.
What's the most creative use of your platform that you've seen and why?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. There's lots of creative examples that we've seen. I think you often see a lot of creativity from really big brands that are using booking space for experiential marketing. So an example that I can think of off the bat is Coca-Cola taking a space in central London for the anniversary of their curved bottle. You know, they outfitted the whole space as a soda parlor, and they had Rita Ora come there and hand out free Cokes to everyone for a week. So
wow.
Way for Coca-Cola, a brand that might instead book, you know, its TV ad or traditional advertising, is now booking a retail space as a way to engage with customers around a moment. Another
wow.
example might be a brand taking space, maybe even more specifically as a billboard. So we had a brand, Hunter Boots, take spaces in the London Underground, take retail space in the London Underground. And they actually didn't sell anything there. They instead built out the spaces into more animated billboards, directing traffic to their store that was around the corner.
Interesting. Yes, Hunter Boots are a staple here in Boston. We may not be a fashion capital, but we certainly buy a lot of rain boots.
A lot of rain boots.
A lot of rain boots. I noticed that you mentioned Net-a-Porter did a pop-up shop. Why? To bring attention to Net-a-Porter or the brands that they make available on their online platform?
A lot of brands like a Net-a-Porter will take space around specific events to interact with a specific customer base. And that's what Net-a-Porter did. It's also what Apple actually did when they booked space with us in the UK. They booked space when they launched their Apple Watch. But it was an event only for influencers, and it was around taking an underground, unexpected space and giving it access to a very select group.
Got it. So I know that your history in business includes some time at Bonobos as their marketing lead. So did this concept, I mean, and obviously Bonobos is an online brand with storefronts that are really showrooms more than anything else. Was this a concept that was available to you when you were looking to build out your physical retail footprint?
No, there wasn't a concept like this based in New York when we were starting out at Bonobos and building our retail presence. We did experiment with pop-ups before going into more permanent locations and had to go more of the traditional route, which can take many months to really find and secure a space and find and negotiate a lease, as opposed to a process through Appear Here, which just takes a couple of days to book space. Makes a lot more sense when you're booking it for short term.
So what are brands and landlords learning as a result of having this capability, this platform now available to them?
I think brands are starting to learn a bit more of ways that they can experiment in retail. So we're seeing brands add more experiences in store, figuring out ways to connect online and offline, whether it be through online digital or digital tagging technology in their store, or simply collecting email addresses of people coming into the shop to make sure that you're still communicating with them after the pop-up. They're also learning new areas to test. So brand, which might historically go into an area with just neighboring brands that are a lot like them, are now willing to experiment a little bit more, either trying a new area that maybe helps change their brand perception or testing a new market for themselves. On the landlord end, I think there's still the need to change. So we're starting to see quite good pickup here in the U.S. And general interest on short-term retail. I think the difficulty is making sure the landlords are able to do it in our way and aren't as stuck in their ways. You know, real estate's really the last industry or one of the last industries to be disrupted by technology. And I think getting landlords to adapt to that technology is our real challenge.
And as I said, there's just so much empty space, particularly in malls. Do you look at mall space as space that you would make available on a temporary basis?
Yes, we do. We actually list several malls in the U.S., all sort of in the New York metro area. The Simon Mall being some of them, given their investment in our business. We also find them to be not only top-tier malls, but ones where they're interested in experimenting a little bit more. We also work with some malls based in cities, like a Brookfield, for example, based here in New York, as well as malls based in London and Paris.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are the malls that aren't necessarily suffering from the same foot traffic demise that that many others are suffering from. So, you know, as I think about brands who want to get exposure, you obviously want to be in places where people walk by or come to notice you. And sometimes malls aren't always those places, but the brands you referenced clearly have good locations and certainly a lot of traffic.
Exactly.
So, let me ask you, so Elizabeth, how do you guys make money? What's your business model?
So we take a percentage off a closed transaction, a closed booking. So it's free for brands to search and free for landlords to list their spaces online. And we take a fee off that closed booking. So a brand pays us, and then we pay out the landlord net of our fee.
When you think back to the very early days of Appear Here and where you've evolved, what are some of the biggest learnings that you've had as a result of bringing brands and retailers or landlords together? Any things that come to mind?
Yeah, I think, and this is probably true of a lot of marketplace businesses, but I think it's being smart about scaling both sides of the platform. So when we go into a new market, you know, before we're loud and shouting about our business, we're in sort of a beta period where we're working to sign up landlords and spaces, and we set targets on the amount of spaces we want to have before we start with paid advertising and press. And I think that's just ensuring that we're matching both sides of the marketplace. I think also it's being a little bit selective on the landlord side on what spaces we take for the platform as we scale, knowing that we want to be able to match both sides of the marketplace. And then I think for us, it's making sure we clearly define our value proposition, but also stay true to our brand and the community that we're building in all of our cities. You know, we place a lot of emphasis on content development, whether it be inspirational content and case studies on what brands have done in the past, or how-to guides that might help a brand. We host regular events in all of our cities to bring the community together. And I think that's really important in an industry that's been sort of ripe for change for so long, and there hasn't been a real brand that's a leader.
So I always like to ask entrepreneurs in these fascinating platforms where they draw inspiration. So other platforms or marketplaces that have characteristics that are either inspiring things that you're doing or inspiring things that are on your roadmap. I know you've been compared to Airbnb and called the Airbnb for retail. Is that one of the platform inspirations, or are there others?
Oh, definitely. So Airbnb was actually one of the main inspirations for the business several years ago, as Airbnb was really starting to scale. I also think it's kind of nice that one of their founders came from a very creative background, like our founder, Ross Bailey. And so seeing how simply that business is in theory, but also how they built a really beautiful brand and how they spend time on community and content and education on both sides of their platform has been an inspiration for us. You know, we also look at other marketplace businesses as looking at how they launch in other cities, whether it be a company like a Deliveroo or an Uber, and how they handle their rollout. I think that's kind of interesting as we're starting to scale in multiple cities and figuring out what the team is like in each city.
Yeah, no, it is that right balance, as you point out, of getting density of supply and density of demand. And it's the blessing and the curse of platforms. You do it well, and scale follows. And if you don't, then it's a problem. One final question that I didn't think to ask until just now, but are there zoning issues in some of these cities that make it difficult for these kind of short-term rentals to happen?
There aren't zoning issues. Landlords sometimes have specific questions on insurance, and that can be sometimes preventative for brands that don't have, you know, a younger brand that might not have the insurance requirements that the landlord meets. That being said, over time, we're starting to explore other options there. I think there's a bit more flexibility in Europe than there is in the States on the insurance end. And it's one that we're starting to educate ourselves on quite a bit more here in the U.S.
Got it. Well, Elizabeth, this was a fascinating conversation. I love learning about Appear here and all the great things that you're doing to bring brands and landlords with space together. It's clearly a disruptive opportunity, but a good one for landlords that are looking for leads on temporary space that could quite possibly turn into a long-term relationship. Thanks for giving us your time today.
Yes, thank you.
And please don't forget Boston. I mean, you went to school here, so you can't really forget Boston. We aren't all that fashionable, but at least we do like to shop. So
we'll keep it on our hit list.
Keep it on your hit list. Thanks again, Elizabeth. I really enjoyed the chat.
All right. Thank you, Karen.
Bye now. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.